when an unprecedented windstorm blew through southern BC overnight on January 12th, Jesse Ellis saw some of the highest wind speed readings he's ever seen. Ellis has been a fire weather forecaster in Castlegar for 10 years. He told KCR reporter Keely Bartlett what makes some weather events unpredictable and the behind the scenes of the science of forecasting.
My name is Jesse Ellis. I'm a fire weather forecaster.
So, Jesse, can you tell us a little bit about your career so far and what made you want to become a weatherman?
I used to be on a wildfire crew. I used to be on an initial attack crew up in Prince George, and I really liked being involved in wildfire. But after a brief career in tree planting that went into firefighting, my body can't withstand that kind of work in the long term. So I had to look for an office type gig, and I was partway through program at university for meteorology. And so those two factors came together and pursued a career as a fire weather forecaster for Bee Wildfire.
It's a little bit more complicated than just looking outside. Can you give people an insight into what kind of work actually goes into this kind of forecasting?
What we do is we look at what is currently occurring, what has occurred in the past, apply what we know about the local terrain and how the local terrain reacts to synoptic weather features. We combine that with raw model output, which is almost always wrong in some respect, and we try to pull out the valuable information from raw computer weather output, pull that out, combine it with what we know about the local topography and what has happened in the past in a similar type of weather pattern to come up with our best forecast for what is going to happen in this scenario. When you look at your weather app or a weather forecast, you may notice that it changes quite a bit from day to day, or it might be quite different from one model to the other. That's in part because of the complexities in the model physics, so how the computer weather models have been built and what calculations they're programmed with in order to come up with their output. But it's also a product of the complexity of the terrain over which the computer models are applied. And so no computer weather models out there are able to properly model the details of all of our terrain features in this region, at least not yet. And so there's meteorological theory that we can apply.
One weather event that we've seen in the news recently has, of course, been the windstorm that hit us last week and hit most of southeastern BC. I was wondering if you could put that storm into context for us. What was extraordinary about it? And did we see any records broken?
The storm that came across the region Tuesday night was really interesting. We saw that feature developing as early as Friday, although we didn't have all the details put together yet. So by Friday afternoon, we could see that off the coast of Japan, there was a really cold pool of air coming down from the northwest. And at the same time, we had a stream of Pacific moisture originating off the coast of the Philippines that was getting injected up into the westerly mid-latitude flow. So the combination of the cold air and basically the temperature differential from north to south, that's where you get a lot of the energy from these storms. And then the other factor where we get a lot of energy is the conversion of latent heat from the atmospheric moisture going from gas to liquids. The more moisture you have and the greater temperature difference you have pulling together around these low pressure centers as they approach from the west, the more intense the storms usually are. And so by Monday going into Tuesday and then into Tuesday night, the feed of moisture, it was classified as an atmospheric river. So an atmospheric river is a more recent term that refers to the same phenomena as a Pineapple Express. So it refers to a significant feed of moisture in the atmosphere that is comparable to the total water flux that we see in the largest rivers of the world. But the winds were a really interesting one, because with our storms that come in from the BC coast, different elements of the storm come into play. And so you need certain things to be going on well above ridgetop elevation, so up around 3,000 to 5,000 meters and higher above sea level. Our moisture comes in at that level because it's up above ridgetop, so that's the moisture that comes in that's not blocked by the coast mountains. But this storm that came through Tuesday night was interesting in that there was a surface-based area of low pressure that actually intensified as it pushed inland. So what we usually see is that the upper features kind of leave the surface features behind because they get hung up on the coast mountains, on the topography of the coast out west. In this case, and we have seen this happen a couple times this winter, there was a surface-based area of low pressure, so basically a surface low that tracked along with the upper feature, along with the storm, and as it intensified moving across the province, we saw pretty strong dip and then the following rise in surface air pressure. And so if anybody was watching their barometers at home, they would have seen a pretty significant rise in surface air pressure during the overnight period after the cold front passage. And so as high pressure builds in the wake of a cold front, that air rushing into the region following in behind the exiting surface low results in our strengthening winds. And in this case, we saw some pretty significant winds. I saw at least a couple places from around the U.S. border up to north of Slocan. We saw ridgetop winds sustained 80 kilometers an hour, gusting to around 120 kilometers an hour. There was one station up around Meadow Creek at ridgetop elevation or near 2,400 meters where we saw sustained winds from our wind sensor of 98 kilometers an hour, gusting to 159. That's the strongest winds I've ever seen working this job, summer or winter. And I am still a little bit skeptical on the data quality out of that one. I've never seen a wind sensor give incorrect values on the high end. I've seen wind speed sensors often give incorrect values on the low end. I'm still a little bit puzzled on whether or not that was an actual true wind or whether that was an instrument error. So it was a very notable wind event, that's for sure. You're going to hear no debate from me whether or not we're looking at a changing climate. However, the influence that has on winds in this area during the winter months is tough for me to pin down. And I'll tell you why. We most often see our strongest winds in the wintertime tied to Arctic outbreaks. So when we have cold, dense, dry air pushing southward or westward, so approaching from northern BC or from Alberta and squeezing into the valleys of the West Kootenay, that's when we usually see our strongest wintertime winds. When you think about strong winds in the Nelson area in the wintertime, they're usually resulting from a cold push down the lake from the northeast due to those push of modified Arctic air. This year, we haven't seen any true Arctic outbreaks into the area yet. If it weren't for that storm last week, we would probably see that we had fewer strong wind events so far this winter than usual. It's not unheard of, I don't think, but it's unusual to go into early, mid-January. The most unusual thing about this winter has been that we haven't seen any significant pushes of Arctic air into the West Kootenay.
This is a question that a lot of people have on their minds here in the Kootenays. Do you have any predictions for the ski season?
Last time I checked, we were in a moderate La Nina phase, and that more often puts us into a slightly cooler than average, slightly more unstable northwesterly flow with a ridge of high pressure offshore. And it looks like that's starting to verify now. It looks like we have a strong ridge of high pressure that is going to be shifting offshore by at least 1,500 kilometers. And when we have a ridge of high pressure offshore, that positions us in a northwesterly flow downstream of that ridge. And so if we're in a northwesterly flow downstream of the offshore ridge, the source region for the air coming into the West Kootenay is originating up over northern BC, sometimes in the Yukon, sometimes in Alaska. So it's inherently cooler, and that means that we should be seeing our temperatures holding closer to, if not dipping below, seasonal averages. And that is more favorable for keeping our snow levels below mid-slope rather than above mid-slope, which is what we've seen with these really wet, juicy, mild atmospheric river events so far this season. So the medium to long-range outlook for the remainder of the winter is for something that should be a little bit more favorable for skiers, and that is slightly lower snow levels. And when the snow does come into the region, it's possible that we see more low-density snow throughout at least the next few weeks here. You know, a northwesterly flow is also can be drier, especially if we come around to a little bit more of a northerly flow, which is what we're expecting later this week. For the skiers, a north or northwesterly flow is tough to predict in terms of moisture amounts, and we can go through more extended spells of no snow. But in between those spells of no snow, we're not seeing as much melting to higher elevations. And when the snow does come in from time to time, it's usually lower density, so it's not the heavy, wet stuff. It's usually, can't tell you if it's going to be 2 centimeters or 20 centimeters. That depends when we get, you know, 3, 4, 5 days ahead of the storms coming at us. That's sort of that sweet spot on when we can give some meaningful information about the next storm coming down the pipe. It's really tough to predict the amounts and frequency of snow more than a week or 10 days out.
Thank you so much for being available. We really appreciate being able to pick your brain about all this.
Well, have a nice week.
You've been listening to weather forecaster Jesse Ellis in Castlegar share how science and technology predict the weather. Also, what makes something unpredictable?